This is Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. We're off today due to an unavoidable scheduling conflict. Today's Bradcast was originally recorded on January 7th, 2025.
A heated online debate among President-elect Donald Trump's supporters has exposed what's being called a MAGA civil war.
And I am there for a MAGA civil war.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Tell me, yes.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, nice.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. To the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am from Pacifica Radio in windy Los Angeles. This is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today when we had a ruder-than-usual awakening this morning out here in L.A. The National Weather Service has been issuing wildfire weather alerts for days now. I don't ever remember seeing a wildfire weather alert in the past. Do you, Desi Doyen?
No, it was a new one for me, too.
With warnings of a, quote, a life-threatening, destructive windstorm from Tuesday afternoon through Wednesday morning. A wildfire weather warning with gusts up to 100 miles per hour. That's hurricane force,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
Category 1 hurricane would be sustained winds, not gusts, but that starts at 70 miles per hour. So that's a lot of wind.
Show off. Anyway, this is after we have had months here without any significant rain. Well, that wind, that wildfire weather came today, and this morning an enormous limb just flew over from a neighbor's tree and crushed our backyard canopy, a cabana thingy.
Yeah,
it was bad, and nobody was hurt, thankfully, but it was a rough way to start the day. I posted a photo of that broken tree and the crushed cabana on Blue Sky at the Brad Blog, if you want to check it out. But in the meantime, the winds are still kicking way up as we go to air here. It sparked at least two fires, one pretty close to us, which I think is out because we're able to do the show now without sirens outside the windows. But a more significant one, much more apparently significant, out near the coast in the Pacific Palisades, Desi Doyen.
Yeah, that's right off of the Pacific Coast Highway. It's a fairly iconic scenery that's used in a lot of movies. But this particular wildfire, it expanded very quickly to 180 acres in just a few minutes, 20 minutes, they say, with these powerful winds fanning the flames. There's now a mandatory evacuation order for folks in the Pacific Palisades. It's a really densely populated area.
Last I saw, it was had actually spread to 300 acres.
Oh, my.
So it is quickly moving. Be careful out there. And we weren't able to fit any of that, by the way, into our latest Green News report, our first GNR since we're back from the holiday break. That comes up a little bit later this hour as we try to catch up with a whole bunch of stuff, including the huge blizzard and cold snap across much of the rest of the country, across the Midwest and the South and the East Coast. So that is later. But the year is certainly off with a bang. And frankly, I don't care for it one bit. Speaking of things I don't care for, Donald Trump, there was at least some fun to be had in that regard over the holidays when this huge fight broke out between his between some of his supporters, between his broligarch supporters like Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy and his hardcore MAGA supporters, his hardcore anti-immigrant MAGA supporters like Laura Loomer and Steve Bannon over immigration visas. I don't think that that is all going to end well, but I sure am enjoying watching it, sitting back and watching it. And the American Prospect's Ryan Cooper will be here shortly to explain what that was and or is all about. So get your popcorn popping there. In the meantime, today, some court and accountability news such that there can be any right now for the once and future criminal president. The federal judge who handled President-elect Donald Trump's classified documents case temporarily barred the special counsel Jack Smith on Tuesday from releasing his final report on the investigation to the public. On two of his investigations, though she appears to have dubious legal authority to have even done so. In her brief ruling, Judge Eileen Cannon, the Trump appointee, you remember her, she's the one down in Florida who dismissed the stolen documents case in its entirety over the summer, the one where Trump had stolen thousands of pages of highly classified documents upon leaving office the first time, and then he failed repeatedly to give them back to the government when he was asked and even when he was subpoenaed for them. So she threw out that stolen documents case on the basis that Jack Smith was unlawfully and unconstitutionally appointed as special counsel, ruling that was immediately appealed by Smith and the Justice Department. That Eileen Cannon, that judge, enjoined on Tuesday Jack Smith from sharing his report outside of the Justice Department until a federal appeals court in Atlanta, which is now considering the challenge to her dismissal of the stolen documents case, makes a decision about how to handle that report. On Monday night, largely after we got off the air, according to the New York Times Today, Trump's lawyers and lawyers for his two co-defendants in that stolen documents case began a multi-pronged effort to stop the release of Jack Smith's report, which they claimed was, quote, one-sided and part of a, quote, politically motivated attack against the president-elect. Trump's legal team wrote a letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland asking him to stop the release of the two-volume report on both the stolen documents case and on Trump's attempt to steal the 2020 election, his indictments there. That report is said to be perhaps made public as soon as this coming Friday. Now, rather than normalizing this absurd legal muscling, as the Times did, as I read this, by the Trump's attorney's argument that the report was simply, quote, one-sided and, quote, politically motivated, as the Times put it, AP was a bit more helpful in their description. They were less normalizing in what is really an unprecedented and ridiculous legal plea. As AP writes, quote, using language that mimicked Trump's own attacks on Smith and his work, Trump attorney Todd Blanch told Garland that the, quote, release of any confidential report prepared by this out-of-control private citizen unconstitutionally posing as a prosecutor would be nothing more than a lawless political stunt designed to politically harm President Trump and justify the huge sums of taxpayer money Smith unconstitutionally spent on his failed and dismissed case. Sounds to me like Donald Trump is writing his own legal briefs at this point. Yes, all of Trump's personal attorneys, many of whom he has now tapped to actually take over control of the Justice Department and the White House counsel's office, they all now write the way Donald Trump speaks, essentially. And their attempt to block the special counsel's report is noteworthy, if only because they pursued no similar effort to stop the release of the reports from the special counsel like Robert Hur on the classified documents that were found in Joe Biden's garage, or the special counsel report on the lack of evidence found from the original Mueller investigation, the investigation into the Mueller investigation, claiming that it was somehow a political hit job on Donald Trump. That was another special counsel investigation. They were fine with the release of those reports, but for now, all of a sudden, not this one for some reason. In a separate move, lawyers for Trump's co-defendants in the stolen documents case, Walt Nauta and Carlos de Oliveira, who worked down at Mar-a-Lago, they went directly to Judge Cannon of the Southern District of Florida. They asked for this emergency order blocking the release, and apparently Cannon was all too happy to give it to him. The legal scramble continued then on Tuesday as Nauta and De Oliveira asked the appeals court hearing the case in Atlanta, hearing the appeal to Cannon throwing it out, to weigh in on blocking the report itself. And Trump then sought to join their motion in front of his friend and personal appointee, Judge Cannon. Who was happy to comply and block this report, at least for now, at least temporarily. We will see what happens ahead. But after Trump won the election in November, Jack Smith dropped the appeal in that case, at least where Trump was concerned. Nauta and De Oliveira are still facing charges, as I understand it. But it effectively ended Trump's part in the matter. Smith did not drop the appeal against Nauta and De Oliveira, and federal prosecutors in Florida purportedly intend to pursue those cases once Jack Smith steps down and disbands his team. That, according to the Times, though I find it next to impossible to believe that Trump will not either fire any prosecutors who actually bring that case against his employees, or he'll, you know, just simply issue his criminal co-conspirators in this case full pardons for helping him to enable his crimes, for which he will face no penalty because he won the last presidential election, and apparently you're off the hook for all crimes if that happens. Boy, well, are we screwed.
But it's only really if you're a Republican.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine any Democrat even trying to get off the hook because I'm president. Therefore, anyway, in better Trump accountability news, for what it's worth, today, an appeals court in New York denied his attempt to prevent his sentencing in New York from taking place on Friday this week in the hush money case in which he was found guilty on 34 felony counts related to his payments to porn star Stormy Daniels before the 2016 election to help him cheat to win that one. Well, he could receive as much as 4 years in jail for those crimes, for which a jury found him unanimously guilty last year. The judge in the case, Judge Justice Juan Merchan, has indicated that due to his election as president, the most likely practical sentence will be a complete and unconditional discharge, which means that he will walk away free, even though he will remain an adjudicated felon and the first one to ever be sworn in as president of the United States in about 2 weeks' time. That's the ruling that in New York that Trump is also appealing. He's appealing his get-out-of-jail-free card. And at least on that front, on Tuesday, the appeals court in New York has denied the once-and-future criminal president. Less lucky, however, is Trump's old pal, his old dupe sucker, former mayor of New York City, and his attorney, now a broken man thanks to his work for Donald Trump. That would be Rudy Giuliani. A federal judge in New York on Monday found the disgraced former mayor and Trump attorney in contempt of court for failing to properly respond to requests for information as he turned over assets to satisfy a $148 million defamation judgment against him that was granted to two Georgia election workers, Shea Moss and her mother, Ruby Freeman, who Trump and Giuliani falsely and repeatedly claimed had committed fraud during the 2020 election. Judge Louis Lyman ruled on Monday after hearing Giuliani testify for a second day at a contempt hearing That was called after lawyers for the election workers said that the former mayor had failed to properly comply with evidence production requests over the past few months. On Friday, Giuliani testified for about 3 hours in the Manhattan courtroom, but the judge permitted him to finish his sentencing. His testifying remotely on Monday from his condo in Palm Beach, Florida, which Moss and Freeman are contending probably belong to them now. Giuliani conceded during Monday's testimony that he sometimes did not turn over everything requested because he believed that the requests were overly broad or inappropriate or even a, quote, trap set by lawyers for the plaintiffs. But, you know, Rudy, you don't get to make that decision. I mean, these guys really believe that the rule of law does not apply to them.
True. That's how they behave.
And at least in Trump's case, I guess that part is now true. Not so for Rudy, however. He has not been turning over information about things he's supposed to turn over. He has not been turning over those actual things. For example, there's a Joe DiMaggio jersey that he owns that I guess is worth some money. He has not turned that over. He has turned over apparently a Mercedes-Benz and his New York apartment, but not the paperwork that would be necessary to monetize them. So here's the keys to the car, but I'm keeping the title. Good luck selling it. It's essentially what he's doing, and he's not giving any information about other things that he owns. He has apparently not turned over, quote, a single dollar from his non-exempt cash accounts.
So he is using his knowledge of the system to abuse the system.
I'm not sure he's got that much knowledge of the system.
Not
he's
anymore.
Just abusing it. Yeah. His lawyers have predicted that he will eventually win custody of the items that are claimed by Freeman and Moss on appeal. In his case, he is attempting to keep that property rather than turn it over, however, in the hopes that he'll eventually win on appeal. That is unlawful. But again, rule of law for everyone else but Rudy and Trump and friends, if they can play the legal system. That said, it looks like Trump is going to be more successful at it than Rudy, who I suspect will die a broken man. We'll see if that same fate eventually befalls his buddy Trump, whose luck has got to run out sometime soon, right? Anyway, speaking of his buddy Trump and whether his luck will hold, a dust-up over the holidays between Trump's hardcore MAGA fans and Trump's hardcore broligarch buddies, led chiefly by the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, suggests that there could be trouble ahead in Trump land, specifically when it comes to immigration and visas for tech workers, which his MAGA supporters are none too happy about. We will try to make sense of that story next with the American Prospect's Ryan Cooper right here on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
I was such a fool to fall in love with you.
Will that be our MAGA theme song in the years ahead? Don't know. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I'm feeling a lot of MAGA folks are going to start figuring out what fools they were for falling in love with Donald Trump. But we will see. Listen, I'm not a financial expert, so don't take my advice on anything when it comes to investment ideas. But I will say this. We very well could see a run on popcorn stocks during the next Trump administration. I don't know, but I think it could happen, at least if the hilarious, somewhat hilarious anyway, dust-up that happened while we were on holiday break recently between Trump's hardcore MAGA base and his broligarch funders, headed up by the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, if that proves to be any indication of what lies ahead. As the American Prospect's Ryan Cooper set the scene for us just after the new year, over the holiday season, a nasty fight erupted between different factions of the Republican Party. On one side are the MAGA faithful, the true believers who want mass deportation, America First economic autarky, and so on, like Stephen Miller and Laura Loomer and Steve Bannon. On the other are a handful of Silicon Valley billionaires, above all, Elon Musk, who clearly believes he has bought the government lock, stock, and barrel by spending some $44.2 billion on campaign contributions and his purchase of Twitter, which really, let's face it, as Cooper suggests, really, that turned out to be a $44 billion campaign contribution to Donald Trump. The fight is over immigration policy, Cooper reports, specifically the H-1B program, which allows employers to sponsor temporary visas for certain technical workers. MAGA diehards hate that program because it gives jobs to non-Americans and because most H-1B recipients are not white. Tech billionaires, however, love it because it saves them money and increases their power. Loomer started the fight by criticizing the appointment of Sriram Krishnan, who had argued in favor of more skilled immigration as an advisor for Trump's Office of Science and Technology Policy. Musk responded in cartoon villain fashion to a small account criticizing him by saying, quote, "The reason I'm in America, along with so many critical people who built SpaceX, Tesla, and hundreds of other companies that made America strong, is because of H-1B," he wrote. "Take a big step back and blank yourself in the face," Musk wrote on Twitter, or X, using a word that I can't say on FCC radio, and adding, quote, "I will go to war on this issue, the likes of which you cannot possibly comprehend." Cue the Bond villain music. When Loomer and others kept posting, the self-proclaimed free speech absolutist, Elon Musk, reportedly stripped verified Twitter status from Loomer and 52 other accounts associated with her organization, effectively demonetizing them for their opinions. So far, at least, writes Cooper, a distinctly low-energy Donald Trump appears to be siding with Musk in this matter. But, boy, does this all appear to have been a rude awakening for Trump's top MAGA faithful, it seems to me, and frankly, a delightful show for the rest of us to enjoy over the holidays. As I said, keep that popcorn popping. Joining us now for more on this and what all of this signals as we move into another Trump administration is Ryan Cooper, managing editor of the American Prospect, author of How Are You Going to Pay for That? Smart Answers to the Dumbest Question in Politics, and the co-host and producer of the Left Anchor podcast. Oh, Ryan Cooper, Happy New Year, sir, and welcome back to the broadcast.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get into the drama of what all of this may mean moving forward, I'm not sure that most folks even know what the hell the H-1B program is, though Trump buddies like Laura Loomer and Steve Bannon and, yes, Elon Musk absolutely know what it is. So what is the H-1B program, and why are the oligarchs, or the broligarchs in this case, like Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, why are they arguing so strongly in favor of this program?
Well, so American immigration policy is incredibly complicated, and it's very difficult to immigrate for normal people. But as far as work visas, you more or less have two different kinds. You have employment-based visas, which do require a job, but have the potential to lead eventually to getting a green card, mm-hmm. and therefore permanent residency. And the H-1B visas, which tie you to a specific job. So your employer has to sponsor you for that visa. Mm. And if you quit or you're laid off or fired, then you know, you have like a limited time to find another sponsor, or you get deported, or you have to leave.
So you describe it as a quote weapon of class warfare. How so?
Yeah, so, you know, for these big tech guys love the H-1B because, you know, it provides a pool of exploitable labor, and especially the type of, you know, skilled technical work that is in somewhat short supply in the United States. You know, those workers can command high salaries, but, you know, you go over to India and you pick up some people and, you know, critically, you tie them to your employment. Then, you know, those people kind of have to do what you say or go back to India and, you know, see their income drop by like 95% or something. And that's gotten even worse, you know, in the latest, you know, the tech winter, as they've been calling it, you know, all the big tech companies, especially, you know, Twitter or Vichy Twitter, as I like to call it, you know, they've been conducting mass layoffs. So there's a huge surplus of programming labor.
Right.
You know, Musk and people like that always talk about how there's a shortage of engineers in this country, and it's just not true. You know, they just want to keep labor costs as low as possible. And so, you know, I think critical to emphasize here that while the H-1B, I would say, is a bad program, you know, it's not the case that, you know, immigrants are a threat to, like, American workers per se. You know, immigration has broad benefits for the economy and society. Mm-hmm. The problem is how they're roped into this sort of like separate caste of exploited people. Mm-hmm. And then that can be used as a weapon against the broader, you know, class of laborers in that profession. And so what we should do is just have the employment-based visas, not to say like we need to kick out all the immigrants like Trump said. That would be the wrong conclusion.
But in this particular case, where you have, as you said, Elon Musk himself laid off thousands of his own employees when he bought Twitter, those were tens of thousands of employees who were not necessarily people on the H-1B program. They were Americans. These are skilled Americans who have done the job at Twitter, who have done it at a bunch of other tech companies over the past year or so, where there's been massive layoffs. In this case, at least, it seems sort of like the hardcore MAGA folks, like Loomer and Bannon and so forth, they're not entirely wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong about this, but they don't seem like they're entirely wrong about the use of, or perhaps even the overuse of these H-1B visas to bring immigrants in to take jobs for lower wages than American workers are actually available and skilled to do. Is that correct?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, their conclusion that you just should kick everyone out is incorrect. But the way that H-1B is used as a tool to keep wages low and therefore profits high and, you know, stock valuations up is true. Mm-hmm. You know, from the gossip that I've heard, at least, and from Silicon Valley people, Twitter probably is only functioning because, you know, there's a remaining core of mostly H-1B people or, you know, Elon Musk fanboys who are working like absurd hours. Mm-hmm. There's not enough employees to keep that site functioning. And it's not functioning like it used to. You know, there's all kinds of bugs and problems, but it hasn't collapsed entirely. And I think that's because there's that, you know, remaining core of people who are just being worked to the bone.
And the H-1B program itself, you seem to suggest it could be useful if it was reformed so that it eventually provides a path to citizenship or at least a green card. So those workers are not so easily exploited by these corporations by it. Is there any discussion of something like that happening among Trump's wealthy oligarchic H-1B supporters?
Absolutely not. No, they like this program a lot. And the only people who are talking about different opportunities are Loomer and so forth. And they just want to get rid of immigration, period. Uh-huh. Kick out all of the immigrants, all legal and otherwise, you know, denaturalize American citizens who were born in this country.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think the proper working class orientation should be, scrap, or, you know, get rid of H-1B or whatever, fold it into the employment-based program so that and just give everyone with the H-1B a green card now so that they are not in, you know, this sort of like biased competition in a sort of different labor market where they can be exploited and lower wages for everyone. If they're all the same, then they can all, you know, work together in solidarity and hopefully, you know, form some unions or something, which I think big tech is long overdue for.
What? Now, so it's not like Loomer and Bannon are against it because it needs to be reformed. They just don't want it. They just don't want any immigrants coming here. But Trump, for his part, he said after this dust up happened, quote, he is a, quote, believer in H-1B. I've used it many times. It's a great program. That said, isn't the program that he uses to staff up his, you know, his Trump, I'm not even sure he uses H-1B or even knows what it is, because it seems like he uses a different program to staff up his golf courses and his Trump hotels. Isn't that actually the H-2B program, which is different from H-1B, as I understand it?
Yes, I believe you're right. Again, I'm not a super familiar with all the ins and outs, and there's like a dozen of these different programs.
Yeah.
But yeah, H-1B is for generally for technical workers, you know, computer programmers, engineers, that sort of thing. You know, Trump doesn't do a lot of that kind of thing. He has landscapers, and that's right. Not people who get H-1Bs.
Yeah, my understanding is that's more for seasonal, temporary work, that there are no educational requirements as there are with H-1B. So I'm not sure Trump has ever used that at all. Now, given Elon's crude, as you described it, sort of cartoon villainesque response to all of this. I mean, he really went to war. He really just out of nowhere. He was, you know, and again, I can't use the words that he said on Twitter about this, but he made it clear he's prepared to go to war with anyone who even challenges his opinion on H-1B. And Trump seems to be acquiescing to Elon's love for the program. So, who wins this one ultimately? Is this the broligarchs or the hardcore MAGA folks who are at least somewhat consistent here in their anti-immigrant activism?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of anybody's guess. You know, we're sort of in the realm of like syphilitic emperor history books. You know, you got Trump, who's 78 and clearly lost many steps from when he was a young man. But Elon Musk is also incredibly erratic and impulsive. And typically two guys, you know, these two megalomaniac narcissists with giant fevered egos, typically you'd say they have a massive falling out over something or other.
Uh-huh.
And that's usually what happens with, Trump and his toadies. The minute they become, you know, inconvenient for him, then he just throws them over the side, which for some reason doesn't affect the supply of people lining up to get thrown over the side to the next day.
Yeah.
But the thing about Elon is, you know, he's the richest person in the world.
Right.
And he controls this still depressingly influential social media platform that all the Republicans are on, posting all day. And, you know, clearly has a massive influence in the abilities, so far at least, to more or less dictate terms for what the government is going to do. And so there's this conflict between the elements of, you know, MAGA that want, you know, sort of a autarkic trade structure and, you know, at least sort of maybe nominal benefits somehow for manufacturing workers or something. And the, you know, oligarch billionaires who don't care about, in fact, they hate the American working class and they want to, you know, tread them under their boot heels. And so one of the other, those, you know, two agendas is going to have to go.
I mean, that's what it seems to me. I mean, it's one thing this, you know, the fallout that you suggest is coming between Trump and Elon, perhaps, even though he's the most famous man, richest man in the world, which it's hard to see Trump throwing that guy over for anything. But it seems like the coalitions here that are forming behind Trump, the Silicon Valley folks, and what their interests are, seem to be, at least on this particular issue, just diametrically opposed from the MAGA base and the promises all of these years of throwing out everyone who's immigrant, mass deportation, and so forth. Is there any way to square that circle? I mean, it seems like one of those two sides is going to have to turn on Trump, unless I'm missing something, which wouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Trump has his agenda of, you know, tariffs and so forth. And, you know, billionaires don't want tariffs. Right. Billionaires don't want to crack down on China. You know, Elon Musk has a bunch of factories in China.
Yep.
And in fact, he stripped out an anti-China provision in the latest spending bill that he blew up and had to be renegotiated. I guess where it may end up would be determined by sort of the economic effects of if Trump goes as wild as he said he's going to, because, you know, you could be looking at all kinds of economic downside risk, you know, like tariffs could spark a trade war and that could cause a global recession. You know, I think that the stock market is pretty overvalued, especially Tesla. I think there's ridiculous amount of investment going into AI, and that's a bubble that's going to pop at some point.
Agree.
And so, you know, if you get some combination of inflation from the whole global trade system being messed up, or a recession, or some kind of financial crisis, then the calculus could change. But so far, you know, in our two big confrontations over the spending bill and over this immigration thing, you know, the guy who thinks he bought the election and the government seems to have been correct. So,
your colleague, our friend David Dayan, suggests that those tariffs are maybe not even going to come to pass at all, because Trump seems to be using them as more of a political weapon, as a threat, than anything else. But you're right. I mean, if he really does unleash them as he has been claiming he's going to, seems like the broligarchs are not going to be in favor of him. So I guess it's a question of which of his own, which portions of his own coalition are going to fall away first, if ever. And then there's the matter of a self-proclaimed free speech absolutist, Elon Musk, actually downgrading these MAGA folks and their status on Twitter X for nothing more, as far as I can tell, than they disagreed with him politically. He removed their so-called verified status so that their posts are now seen by far fewer people. He demonetized those accounts so they don't share in ad revenue. Now, one might think that they would get the message that this guy isn't actually about free speech at all at this point. MAGA folks, however, I don't know, maybe slow learners, but do you get any sense that they're getting that message, or, you know, and or that they will be, you know, joining us over at Blue Sky soon, even though, God, I hope they don't?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's I don't think Laura Loomer would find a welcoming home in a non-right-wing social media platform. But, you know, it's true what you say, that all this free speech pablum has always been a transparent fraud.
Yes.
And it has been for since Elon took over.
Thank you. Yes.
You know, Josh Marshall just published an article. He says, quote, "There is no free speech on Twitter. We've seen with predictable frequency that Musk's version of free speech is one in which those who get on Musk's bad side routinely get their accounts suspended, shadow banned, and all the rest." Mm-hmm. What Musk has created is no more than a crude version of what right-wingers always claimed the old system was: self-interested bosses crudely putting their thumbs on the scale to advance their political goals. And he's just always been doing that.
Yep.
But this is kind of how conservatives have always thought about free speech. Free speech is when they get to say whatever they want and you get to shut up. Like that you can say what they want, or you can be quiet.
Yep.
Or else.
Yeah.
It's entirely one directional. And I think that, you know, the difference is, like, people like Loomer never thought they would catch the business end of that particular dynamic, but they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's just a complete fraud to call it free speech. It's not free speech. Free speech for me, but not for thee.
And you're right. I mean, has been from the very beginning. As soon as he, you know, took over the site, he started banning journalists who were reporting on his, you know, where his plane was flying. And yet you had all of these, people, certainly on the right, but then you had folks like Matt Taibbi playing along with this nonsense that there was this huge, you know, free speech problem that, you know, before Elon took over. It's kind of mind-boggling that people have bought into this. Then again, I guess it's mind-boggling that people have bought into Donald Trump for so many years. Elon also almost blew up the pre-Christmas, I think it was, the hiatus, before the hiatus, the budget deal in Congress that had been struck between Republicans and Democrats after months of negotiation. It was essentially going to kick the can down the road on funding the federal government for a few months with a continuing resolution that largely just continue the current spending levels for the most part. But then Elon decided that he was against it for some reason. It's unclear why exactly he was against it. And then Trump had to eventually join him in also pretending to be against it. And that was about 2 weeks ago. But I think many of us have already forgotten it. It seems like years ago now. But what does that matter, Ryan Cooper, and Elon's apparent win? It seems like an apparent win on the H-1B business, because Trump has seemingly agreed with him. What does that tell us about Musk's control, at least right now, of the Trump administration, who's actually going to be pulling the strings in it starting in about 2 weeks' time?
Yeah, I mentioned that briefly before. You know, my colleague and I, David Dan, wrote sort of different posts on this. And, you know, you look at what Elon was posting, and he just went on a classic posting bender, starting at like 4 o'clock in the morning, repeating all these insane, you know, lies or, you know, misinformation about what was in this bill that was going to create like bioweapons facilities and all this nonsense.
Right.
And so I think, you know, he does have a case of severe Twitter brain poisoning. We've all seen it. Maybe we've all experienced it to some degree, of just being, you know, glued to the phone and just scrolling with your mouth open and just sort of automatically, you know, retweeting, and it, you know, concerning. I'm looking into this. But the other thing, you know, as I mentioned, that there are some China controls on export restrictions to, you know, and investment restrictions on businesses in China, American businesses working in China. And when the spending bill was renegotiated, all those are mysteriously gone. Yep. And one thing about Elon Musk is he has massive factories in China, and he sells lots of Teslas in China. It's his single biggest market, at least for now. I think that's going to change very soon. BYD is going to eat his lunch, but you know, there is a short-term serious material interest in, you know, not doing America First policy, such as it is, so that Elon Musk can continue to, you know, profit from our, you know, ostensible greatest foreign adversary. Again, as of right now, Elon Musk appears to be calling the shots, and nobody, least of all Trump, is stopping him at all. But we'll see whether that changes.
Yeah, he didn't seem to really have anything that he was against. You're right, when, you know, that fight about the budget happened, and he would, concerning, troubling, oh, this is not good, and, you know, didn't mention any specific policies or any problems that he had with it, other than it all has to go, and that there should be no legislation whatsoever until Donald Trump is sworn in. Then, lo and behold, he actually gets something out of it. Out of the revision that they went through, such as it was revised, and Donald Trump got absolutely nothing, it seems to me. So that's instructive moving forward. Lastly, Ryan Cooper, you wrote the book, How Are You Going to Pay for That? Smart Answers to the Dumbest Question in Politics. Well, Ryan, Republicans in Congress say they want to have one big, huge bill that pretty much encompasses everything they're hoping to get through in the next Trump administration. They want to do it quickly. They want to do it early, most notably to extend the 2017 tax cuts, which will otherwise expire for the rich and huge corporations. So I ask you, how will they pay for that, Ryan Cooper?
Well, you know, there are a number of options. You know, you can like repeal various subsidies for Obamacare and Medicaid, you know, other benefits. You know, you could decrease the Defense Department budget if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could also just not pay for it. You could just pass it through normal legislative order, and where you don't have the reconciliation process rules,
mm-hmm.
but that would require getting rid of the filibuster, mm-hmm. and Republicans only have 53 votes and probably not 51 votes for, I guess you'd only need 50 votes for getting rid of the filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
And there really hasn't been much discussion of doing that either. And so if you do it that way, according to the rules, at least, like you would have to make it budget neutral.
It has to be budget neutral if it's done via the reconciliation process that doesn't require overcoming the filibuster. It can't add to the deficit under reconciliation.
Yeah, according to there's a lot of very complicated moving parts, but it has to pass the Congressional Budget Office review, which is often mistaken. But, you know, basically you can't increase the deficit over a 10-year period, and you can't have stuff that isn't related to the budget in some way, which, again, is a totally weird, you know, like surely everything is related to the budget at least a little bit, but there's a lot of complicated rules. It's a completely insane way of doing any type of legislation, but that's what we have. That's what we've developed.
Hmm.
So there's about 50 ways this could go completely sideways, and the Trump tax cuts are going to, you know, cost trillions, and you'd have to find that quote unquote somewhere. Or change the way that the bill is negotiated, where the procedure works.
Yeah.
And they have such a tiny majority in the House that is also filled with, you know, frothing at the mouth lunatics, that it's going to be really hard to wrangle all of them to get anything through, much less all of their priorities at once. It's anybody's guess.
I think my advice to invest in popcorn stocks may have been the best after all. I'm going to put everything into Orville Redenbacher. Ryan Cooper, really appreciate joining us today in the new year. We may be leaning on you more and more to help us make sense in the days ahead. You can find his work at prospect.org. You can also listen to his podcast, which is called Left Anchor. You can find them on The Blue Sky at Left Anchor. You can find Ryan over on Blue Sky at Ryan L. Cooper. And again, his book is How Are You Going to Pay for That? Smart Answers to the Dumbest Question in Politics. Always great speaking with you, Ryan. Appreciate that. And we'll talk to you soon.
Glad to come on.
Thank you, sir. Okay. So, by the way, the other thing they could do to muscle that tax cut through is just change the rules.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's what they do, or ignore the rules. Doesn't matter what the Congressional Budget Office says. Doesn't matter what the parliamentarian says. Fire them.
Yes.
And just do whatever the hell they want to do anyway.
Yeah, and I think that they will try to do whatever the hell they want anyway. And I also want to make sure that folks understand that there is a strong cohort of Republicans in Congress that are talking about cutting Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid to pay for these tax cuts. And that they're not shy about it. So I think people need to be ready to call the representatives and make sure they hear loud and clear what you want them to do.
Oh, it's going to be a fun couple of years. Let's take a quick break, and we are back with, speaking of fun, Desi Doyen and her latest Green News Report, catching us up after the holidays and jumping right in with the mess across the country right now.
Feet first.
That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. My thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help Desi Doyen and I stay on your public airwaves. You're the only one that keeps us here. Thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast, originally recorded on January 7th, 2025.
I'll stop the world, it melts with you.
I will say that while we have been on air all day, Desiree, that wind howling outside after the tree limb that fell in our backyard, it's kind of creeped me out. I'm kind of like hearing that wind outside and thinking, oh, is a tree limb going to come flying through? That would make for fun live radio, wouldn't it?
Oh, boy.
That
yeah,
would be
kind
fun.
Of live radio I don't need to have any more of. But suffice to say that when these kinds of warnings come around, do listen to your local officials who will tell you the best way to behave around this kind of dangerous weather.
We are, of course, talking about the windstorm, the wildfire warnings out here in Los Angeles with wind gusts up to 100 miles per hour. That still persists. But we're all okay, even as that fire in Pacific Palisades is now up to more than 300 acres. So be careful out there. And now let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
Dangerous conditions on the roads along a stretch of more than 1,000 miles from the Central Plains all the way to the Northeast.
New year, new punishing extreme weather. 2024 was the hottest year on record, plus...
All of us must learn to waste less energy.
The legacy of Jimmy Carter, one of the greatest conservation presidents.
All of that and more that happened while we were out, straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We really have a sprawling winter storm from Kansas and the Central Plains in the middle of the United States all the way to the eastern seaboard, giving the worst of every season for an extended period of time.
The worst of every season. Welcome to 2025. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, things are getting terrible right off the top. No way around it. What do you got for us this year?
Well, as you say, 2025 is off to an extreme start with a new outbreak of the polar vortex, forcing icy Arctic air into the United States, generating deadly severe winter storms across the eastern half of the country and knocking out power amid frigid temperatures. Some Midwest states have declared states of emergency. The UK and Europe are also getting hit with extreme cold, storms, and floods. And yes, man-made climate change plays a role. Studies suggest climate change is altering the jet stream, increasing the likelihood of these polar vortex outbreaks. And according to Washington Post meteorologist Matthew Cappucci,
as the climate warms, we're adding more moisture to the atmosphere. And so we're seeing less snow overall, but bigger snowstorms because the storms that still manage to be snow have that much more moisture to work with.
Oh, well, that's a great way to kick off the year.
While we were out, it became official. 2024 was the hottest year ever recorded in human history, according to the World Meteorological Organization and other global science agencies. It caps a full decade of unprecedented heat. The new record is especially disturbing in a year without an El Nino to boost global temperatures.
Yeah, 2024 was supposed to be cooler than the record 2023 because there was no El Nino, and now... it turned out to be hotter?
Yep.
Why?
Scientists aren't exactly sure yet.
Get it together, scientists.
Scientists at World Weather Attribution have found that man-made climate change intensified nearly all of the 29 extreme weather events around the world that they studied over the last year that killed roughly 4,000 people and displaced millions, mostly in the developing world. The WMO also announced the last 10 years have been the hottest decade ever recorded since record-keeping began in the mid-1800s, and as scientists had predicted back in the 1950s. In other news, in Europe, Ukraine cut off Russia from using a key natural gas pipeline across its territory to export gas to Europe, but officials say Europe is not at risk of any shortages. As Republicans take power in Washington, major U.S. banks, including Citigroup and Bank of America, have exited the Net Zero Banking Alliance, a global banking industry effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. On Monday, President Joe Biden banned new oil and gas drilling across most of the U.S. coastline, concluding that the environmental and economic harms from oil spills and other drilling impacts outweigh any limited fossil fuel resource potential.
Well done, Joe.
The order does not affect parts of the Gulf of Mexico, where the majority of U.S. offshore drilling occurs, but it protects coastlines along parts of Alaska, the West Coast, the East Coast, and Florida from all future drilling.
Future until Donald Trump reverses it.
Well, it is intended to counter potential expansion of offshore drilling under the incoming Trump administration, and overturning it is possible but complicated.
Good.
Finally, the late former President Jimmy Carter, who died at the age of 100 just before the new year, was an environmental visionary ahead of his time. He installed solar panels on the White House, created the Department of Energy and the National Labs System to advance energy research, saying, quote, "Nobody can embargo sunlight." He worked to shift the U.S. away from dependence on fossil fuels and advance renewable energy. In 1977, amid an energy crisis, he urged Americans to conserve.
If we all cooperate and make modest sacrifices, if we learn to live thriftily and remember the importance of helping our neighbors, then we can find ways to adjust. All of us must learn to waste less energy.
Carter was the first president to protect pristine parts of Alaska from oil development, and he did much, much more. He was one of the most consequential environmental presidents in modern U.S. history.
Thank you, Jimmy. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the social medias, including Blue Sky at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You didn't have to shake me like you did, but you did, but you did. And I thank you.
It's something that you had mentioned on a previous show that if we had only followed the path that Jimmy Carter was desperately trying to set the United States on, how much further along we would be today in our transition away from fossil fuels, and how much the United States would own the clean energy market around the world instead of China, and how we would also have a lot less pollution now and a lot less of the pollution sicknesses that we have now. And, of course, climate change would not be nearly as difficult to tackle as it is now because of all of that.
And we wouldn't have the fossil fuel industry controlling every single thing and giving billions of dollars to Donald Trump. It would have been a different world.
The road not taken.
In any event, thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's broadcast, you can download it, like all of the others, for free at bradblog.com. That's made possible by those of you kind enough to hit a donate button over at Bradblog, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves through the difficult years ahead. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks, Twitters, and yes, the Blue Skies, where you'll find us the most. I am the Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.